While the Netflix adaptation of Jeff Charlotte's best-selling book, The Family, The Secret Fundamentalism at the Heart of American Power, helped bring more awareness of a crisis corroding our constitutional democracy, it may well have been far too little, far too late. As entrenched partisan and preacherly voices alike grow louder and louder in their dismissal of a duly elected American president, it is nonetheless essential to expose the perversion of power that lies at the heart of this anti-democratic movement. Jeff's investigative work, as chronicled in The Family and the follow-up C Street, equips him to explain some of these unholy alliances. But he's also reported from inside several Trump rallies, and as a keen observer of human nature and behavior, has astutely described the zealous fervor of these rank-and-file MAGA fans. At this moment in our nation's history, where a new and unprecedented crisis is far from impossible, indeed may already be well underway, I am grateful to welcome Jeff Charlotte back to State of Belief Radio. Jeff, I can't thank you enough for being here today.
Good to be with you again, Wilton.
Let's start with the elected officials who are colluding with leading supposedly religious leaders in pretending Biden didn't win. What are we seeing here?
I've been pretty firm from November 3rd on, or really before, that the way to understand this is as a slow motion coup attempt. And I say attempt because it's not a done deal, and I'm cautiously optimistic it won't be. And I say slow motion because it's not, this is not what we see in the movies, and it's taking place on many fronts. And I think the temptation for many is to believe, well, whatever happens, it doesn't matter, the center will hold, or to tell ourselves, well, this is just a cynical attempt to rake in bucks, and or this is just Trump's ego, or he's just trying to avoid a prosecution, and Mitch McConnell knows better and eventually will say so, to which I say yes to all of it. And I think when we remember that Trumpism is fundamentally a religious movement, we recognize that religious movements are almost always bigger than their catalyst, than their leaders understand. So what's been unleashed doesn't really matter about the intentions of those ostensibly in charge right now. I think the question we'll have to ask ourselves is, where is this movement going?
From your knowledge of these alliances, is the impetus flowing from politics to religion, or are the Paula Whites of the world giving the politicians their inspiration, or is that too simplistic a framing entirely?
I would say the greater transaction is grassroots is a term that we often sort of associate with liberalism and the left, and as a positive term, I mean it more neutrally or in this case sort of threateningly. I think the impetus is coming from the base, and there's a very different relationship between base and leadership on the right now than we're used to in American politics. You know, the way I think of it, actually, a parallel, if people sort of remember this from following politics, is in Venezuela and the late leftist strongman, Hugo Chavez, who had a movement. And when he didn't go fast enough, well, the movement said, okay, the Chavez movement is going on without him. They would go ahead. And you know, I want to leave aside political aims, but just to sort of point out that that was a movement that understood that ultimately they didn't even need the man for whom their movement was named.
Jeff, are these people just throwing things against the wall to see what sticks? Or was there likely a longstanding plan to chip away at the election's credibility all along?
My answer to so many questions these days is yes. Yes to everything. I mean, on the one hand, Trump is not doing anything that he hasn't been telling us he was going to do since 2016. He's never said, you know, I mean, let us reward him for consistency. He came in saying, I'm an authoritarian. I will not respect democracy. That's not how it works. Only I get to win. And here we are. At the same time, and of some modest reassurance, is no, there's not a well thought out plan. He's just throwing everything in every which way. Of course, that's what he's always done. He is not the ninja of right wing politics. He's the Tasmanian devil, just sort of whirling and throwing out. And he only needs one thing to work. And I think, even as I get reassured now, okay, I am reassured by some of the Republicans breaking ranks. I'm reassured by the victory in Arizona. I know he needs only one thing. And whether it's the so-called Million MAGA March this weekend in Washington, which will probably be, 5,000 people. But if we get the wrong kind, which is to say for him, the right kind of trouble on that day, that gives him what he needs. Or I look at, because I'm on all the Trump mailing lists, so I get now, I mean, if you're monitoring this too, it's almost on the hour, a fundraising appeal. Much of it aimed at Michigan, which is interesting because that's the least close of all the states. It is the one where he has maybe the Republican state legislature that is most likely to overturn the will of the people. But it's also the one led by Gretchen Whitmer, a woman who drives him insane, who he knows drives his base insane, against whom there has been a kidnapping and a potentially assassination attempt. And here he is saying, Michigan, Michigan, Michigan. And it's hard not to see him sort of saying, I think I'll rile up the base. And I'm not saying anything, but were they to do something terrible, well, then only I could come in to restore order. He's trying everything. And that's reassuring because it's not a good plan. It's not reassuring because it only takes one thing to win. And that's how he's been doing it his whole life. He's never moved forward with a clean plan.
Jeff, you know a lot of these people. What are the steps we're likely to be seeing next?
I think there's a lot of steps. I mean, there was a sort of the fascinating sort of two-step that we're seeing by some religious right leaders, like Robert Jeffries, the Dallas pastor, major pastor, and so on, has been a real staunch Trump supporter. And then seemed to back off and say, well, I guess sort of Biden was elected, and then said, no, I didn't say that. Right. And this kind of flirtation with, I think a lot of these figures are trying to sort of say, okay, how do I position myself for most effective power in the years to come? Because everybody knows, the right wing is going to be very strong in the years ahead. We all know, Trump got the second biggest vote in history. He got his red wave. It just didn't include him. So they're trying to figure out how do I best position themselves. Whereas when you go and you look out in the fields of QAnon and if God help you, you sign on to Parler and start, as some of us have done against our doctor's orders, and reading that, you're seeing, to me, what is interesting, the sort of tension between Trump won and he's going to win and this sort of ongoing confidence. And I think of it as sort of like another religious metaphor from the 19th century, the Millerites, who became the Seventh-day Adventists, but in the beginning were apocalyptic religion, and they had a day in 1844, I believe it was, when the world was going to end. And then it didn't, right? And it became a sort of respectable religion. Other times, though, when we see this, the other tension is the beginning of a martyrdom cult, right? And Trump is playing this too. That's a possibility. He's not as comfortable. He loves being seen like Jesus, but the part where he gets on the cross, he's not interested in. And unfortunately, that's the narrative a lot of people have. And so you already see this growing sort of thing. We will soldier on in the name of our martyr, Trump, who was robbed, who was stolen from. So now you start getting into Jim Jones territory, David Koresh territory. That's quite frightening.
I'm glad you mentioned Jeffries, and I don't want to spend much time on it. I can tell you that, but I do want to ask what went on there, because there were a few minutes earlier this week in which he sounded sane and that he was trying to be responsive to what democratic process would be like, and then all of a sudden he turns. What was going on there?
Yeah, and I think we've seen actually a number of the right-wing senators do that as well. But to me, the blueprint for that is set by the Philadelphia postal worker who comes out with an affidavit written for him by the right-wing group Project Veritas, allegedly written for him, an affidavit saying there was voter fraud. The FBI goes and speak to him, and he says, actually, no, I take it back. I recant it. I didn't say it. And then he next day releases a video saying, no, I never did that, right? I think this is the collapsing democratic wobble is what I'll call that dance. And it's not so much motivated by integrity as uncertainty about what's safe to say and when it's safe to say it. I don't give Jeffries sort of credit for courage or sanity when he was saying that. I say this is a guy who has shown himself in the last several years as, I mean, incredibly fine-tuned to power. He is, he is a tuning fork for power, right? And what's frightening about this moment is there's all these sort of right-wing figures, they're trying to hear it, and they can't quite get the signal. Partly because Trump is beaming on all, he's on all stations, all channels, all signals at the same time right now. And they're trying to figure out which is the one I should get on. So I think that's a sign of deep, deep instability. That's his recanting that is more frightening to me than the momentary sanity was reassuring.
I have such a hard time imagining a Congress where some members are all but taking marching orders from committed Dominionists, while so many others continue to serve broad and diverse electorates. With the public so loudly and angrily divided, Jeff, what do you think the legislative branch is really like behind the scenes? Or are they literally not talking at all anymore?
Well, this is an interesting thing I've been thinking about. And if you allow me a little bit of speculation, because I don't have the reporting on this, and I don't think anybody's going to. But I look at the Republican senators who they haven't actually, I think the press is overstating what they've done. They said there should be briefings, but they're doing the same thing as Robert Jeffers. Like, well, we don't know who won, but there should be briefings for Biden. Well, that goes in a certain direction, right? So we have Grassley, Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa, Senator John Thune of South Dakota, Senator Jim Lankford of Oklahoma, and Lindsey Graham of South Carolina. And then over on the Democratic side, we have Senator Chris Coons of Delaware, a very, very staunch ally of Biden, and an interesting figure to me because he has always been deeply involved in the group that I've written about, the Fellowship, the family. He's one of the few Democrats who gets involved in that. Well, now Chris Coons is saying, off the record, Republicans are talking to me, you know, and they're saying same things. I can't help the fact that of those four, Thune, Grassley, and Lankford are all also guys who have been very involved in those prayer meetings, those weekly prayer meetings. And I'm wondering if Coons is not using that behind-the-scenes network to actually maybe achieve something kind of mild-mannered. It reminds me of the fact that sort of not too often discussed in history that Nixon's pardon was worked out in a Bible study in which Gerald Ford was a member with Melvin Laird, who was then the Secretary of Defense, and so on. That was worked out on those terms. And it looks to me that there's one branch of this kind of Christian nationalism that does favor stability. It favors stability absent accountability. That's what Nixon's pardon was, right? Let's smooth things out. Let's move it on. Let's keep the power structure in place. And I think I see that happening behind the scenes legislatively. I hope I don't see the real energy and weight behind just sort of kind of suicidal civil war. I don't see that. I think they're going to find a way to pursue stability, and they're going to sacrifice any kind of accountability to achieve it.
You attended a number of rallies and interviewed people that you met there. Talk about what this moment must be like for them. The hated fake news claiming Biden won while their president and their pastors insist the election was stolen.
Well, at this moment, well, I think you're mistaken. President Trump won a landslide victory, and this is a great moment because, of course, we knew it was going to happen. He won the land. Oh, don't worry. CNN are saying whatever they're going to say. They always lie. I don't even look at them, right? There is that attitude. Where I live in Vermont in a fairly blue little area. I was talking to a friend of mine in rural Wisconsin, and he was talking about speaking to his Trump supporting friends in the days after the election and saying they're his friends, like, I'm sorry, you know, your guy didn't win. And they were just puzzled. What are you talking about? No, they didn't see this as an argument. They didn't see this as a dispute. Trump won. They knew it. So for some true believers, and you see this again also on Parler and the sort of the right-wing chat groups, everything's great. You see some QAnon believers who are just patting themselves on the back because their man, they've been saying for a long time he was playing five-dimensional chess. Turns out it's six-dimensional chess. This is all, so these are the ones who say, yeah, okay, technically he lost, but this is all part of the plan. I'm so glad this is happening. It's a kind of forced joy, a frenzied joy. Let's maybe most charitably chalk it up to one of the stages of grief, and hope they move along that ladder soon. Because if they don't, if they get stuck in that place again, that's where we get the kind of martyr movements that are familiar on the smaller scale to us from figures like Jim Jones and David Koresh.
Jeff, in a previous interview on this show, you talked movingly about ways that the disaffected, angry attendees at Trump rallies could be re-engaged by the rest of the nation. Has it now gone too far? Is there any way to de-escalate what we're seeing developing?
I think the good news there is, I'm not one who supports let's reach out to them. I'm quite persuaded by the pain and suffering of all those who have been especially hurt by Trumpism. Let the Trumpers reach out first at this point. But I think probably none of those things can happen. And there's, but there will be a little, the old, you know, the old cliche, time heals, not all wounds, but it heals some. And it's worth remembering that so many of these Trumpers, this is really true, were Obama supporters at one point, right? And then some who weren't, but they were establishment Republicans at one point. That transformation for some will probably be was a one-way transformation and they're not coming back. But for many, they're going to drift with the currents of American life. There's a certain amount of sort of responding to power as it is. And I think this is actually what the sort of very sophisticated Christian nationalists have always understood. I think of something that the Reverend Rob Shank, who's a Christian nationalist, sort of evangelist to some congressman, speaking, and he was speaking in admiration of the Fellowship, which is really the premier sort of evangelist to right-wing congressmen. And he said to them, he said, you know, they're into what is. They're into what is. It's a religion of the status quo, and they know that they can bring a lot behind them. Trump has been what is. When he is not, I think for some small number, not even that small, the spell is going to just fade. It's not going to break. There's not going to be an epiphany. It's just going to fade. And I think we have to be open to that possibility.
How bad could this get? What is the worst case scenario for all of this?
I'm cautiously optimistic. At the same time, I'm deeply concerned. I think coup is very much still on the table and will be until January 20th. I think we should not rest or rest easy until then. I think Trump staying in power is possible. I think Trump doing something in his anger and his sort of his lack of discipline, doing something incredibly dangerous. A failed coup would be as devastating to us as an attempted coup. And I think that's really the fact is so much of the damage has already been done. It's going to take us years to figure out just how badly wounded we've been.
Jeff Charlotte is a best-selling author, a sensitive writer, and a keen observer of the human condition. He's a professor at Dartmouth College and editor-at-large of the Virginia Quarterly Review. His powerful book, The Family, The Secret Fundamentalism at the Heart of American Power, was adapted as a film in 2019 by Netflix. Jeff, it's always great to have you with us. Thank you so much for being with us again today on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you, Elton. Good to be with you.